From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Mark Report. It's the 5th day of August, 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. We're going to skip the newscast for the day and the crop production updates we normally hear on Tuesdays from Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, Nebraska, and Minnesota, and even our regular Tuesday afternoon discussion of the energy markets. Instead, we'll hear a conversation I had this morning with Scott Faber. He is the Vice President of Federal Affairs for the Grocery Manufacturers Association. This is the group Iowa Senator Grassley has blamed for the campaign against ethanol. And in just 26 minutes, meteorologist Don Day will join us for a look at the agricultural weather forecast, as he usually does on a Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of WILL Public Radio from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
In Chicago, on a Tuesday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. September wheat futures at $7.80. Soft red settled 21 and a quarter higher. December contract at 804 and three quarters up 21 cents. And the March at 828 and three quarters 21 and one quarter higher. September in Kansas City at 806 and a half, 10 and a half cents higher for the hard red winter wheat. September corn futures back in Chicago, 10 and a quarter cents lower today, 525 and a quarter the settlement price, down 10 and one quarter for the September. December at 545, 10 and a half cents lower. March at 564 and three quarters down 11, and the May futures at 577 and three quarters, 10 and one quarter lower. August soybean futures $12.62 and a half, down 24 and a half. September at 1259, down 26 and a half, and November at 1269, down 26 cents. January soybeans 26 and a quarter lower at $12.86 and three quarters. August bean meal futures 347.50, down 6.50. August bean oil at 52.98, down $1.12. August live cattle futures from the Mercantile Exchange, $100.22 and a half, a nickel higher. The October futures were 60 cents lower at 106.90. Feeder cattle August contract 115.35, down 7.5. September at 117.10, down 72.5. And the lean hogs August contract $82.77 and a half, up 52 and a half cents. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. $119.95, the last trade for the crude oil September contract, $1.46 lower. October crude at $119.05, down $2.64. August ethanol at $2.18 and 9 cents, down 5 and 6 cents for the day. The natural gas September contract at $8.70 even, 2 and 6 cents lower. RBOB gasoline trading the nearby at $2.94, down 6 cents even, and the diesel fuel at $3.27 and 6 cents. That's the heating oil, 7 and 4 cents lower. September propane not trading, but the last trade was $1.78 and a half. August gold futures at $878.60, down $21.50 for the day. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average at 11,572 is just about 288 points higher. The CRB index at 398.90, that's down 3.08. And the dollar at 73.86 is up 0.40 on the afternoon.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Learned Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products to farmers in East Central Illinois. Learned Seed Service provides customer services and agronomic information to help customers maximize profits. Learned Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
Here's a quick look at the weather forecast for the two-state region from our own Mike Sola. Of course, a heat advisory in effect for southern Illinois and extreme southwestern Indiana. He says tonight across the two-state region, in the north it'll be partly cloudy. In central Illinois, mostly cloudy, a few lingering showers during the evening. In the south and in central Indiana, cloudy, showers, and thunderstorms. Lows will range from 60 in northwestern Illinois to 75 in southern Indiana. Tomorrow in the north, mostly sunny. In central sections, partly to mostly sunny. In the south, partly sunny, scattered showers, a few thunderstorms, highs between 85 and 90.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Doug Slayton in Galesburg at 309-341-5003. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
Are you beat up today?
Yes, we are. I'll tell you what. You know, I understand how we opened this morning with looking at SC Stone's numbers from yesterday with the weather forecast for some rain to come in and maybe dampen up some of the Delta area and, of course, the way the crude oil had been acting and everything along the way. So we were expecting a weak open. It was that little rally through the day, especially when Informa come with larger numbers than even FC Stone that surprised us a little bit there. And then, of course, the sell-off late in the crude brought the market back down, I think, to some of the reality of those big numbers we saw from Informa and FC Stone.
And Informa's numbers at a 12.33 billion bushel corn crop and a soybean production forecast at 3.054 billion. That, of course, would move carry up out on both of those particulars. And they were talking about 155.5 bushel acre national average.
And wow, you know, with the way we started this year, it's just hard to believe we can do that good, Todd. But, you know, like I say, that we're hearing some good reports in some places, and we're hearing, you know, corn in northern Illinois last night. A lot of it, some of it got knocked over with some 50 to 60 mile an hour winds. But we know that hopefully wasn't a real large area. But with all the problems that we've suffered through this year, those are some awfully big numbers.
Yeah, so Informa's numbered a 12.33 on corn, FC Stone at a 12.197, and USDA, of course, at 11.7 for the corn. Where are you standing at this time?
Well, I think that maybe I'd have to be between the government and those two, Todd, because I'm not quite as enthusiastic as Informa and FC Stone are, but I'm not quite as negative as the government either.
And then how about the soybeans?
Soybeans, tell me when it's going to frost, and if we can get these finished on out. I think that that's a big thing. As we talk to a lot of the people in the insurance agency that are out there driving around and adjusting fields and whatever, there's some very short beans in southern Illinois, southern Indiana, Missouri, and around that way from all we're hearing. And I think that given time, why the bean crop could be there. But, you know, right now the Delta is really burning up. If they're not under irrigation, they're not going to be very good in some of the southern states. But all in all, given time, we could see their numbers be okay. But we're not thinking that the growing season might be quite as long needed as to get there.
In the December contract and the corn, I think we moved right up against the 200-day moving average today on the bottom side of that trade.
Yeah, the bottom side. Yeah, that's right, Todd. And, you know, we thought for a while this morning when we saw this market rallying out here that maybe we'd found a little spot of stability. I mean, we're really oversold. I mean, we've really moved down. We've got down into where we thought there could be some value coming into these markets and maybe some demand starting to develop. You know, a few weeks ago on Commodity Week, I said that we had plenty of $7.80 to $8 corn, but I didn't know, you know, I thought we maybe would be very much in tight supply if we got down closer in the low fives. So I guess we're going to find out and see if my prediction was right here, because we're getting down those low fives by the time you get the cash basis off. So, you know, we should start picking up some demand down at these levels, Todd.
Oh, I better correct myself, because I said 200, but I've got too many red marks on the screens in front of me. Actually, I think that's a 50-day moving average, and those are two entirely different sets of moving averages and a long way apart in that December contract. If you had to guess the rest of the week, what would things look like?
Well, I think, you know, number one, we're going to take a look and see what crude oil does. When it dipped below the 120 as we were nearing the close today, that's when the market seemed to fall apart. And I think that if crude oil would continue to move on down, we're going to keep the grains under pressure for right now, Todd. And it's the main thing we're looking at right now. I think the outside markets, as far as the Chinese, seem to their markets have been going down very sharply. They haven't been very evident as buyers here in the last few days. They're very concerned with the Olympics right now and sort of absent from the market. And, of course, they're a big player, and that hurts us. So we did see Egypt buying some wheat today, and, of course, the wheat was the only market that was up.
Okay, thanks much.
Thanks, Todd.
That's Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. I'm Todd Gleason. listening to the Closing Mark Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, public radio for the farming world. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason, urging you to visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. Today we're going to dispense with our normal look at the USDA crop production weather reports when we talk to the statisticians from Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Nebraska, and Minnesota. Those are the five top corn-producing states. We recorded them, but thought it was maybe more important this afternoon to talk with the Grocer Manufacturers Association Vice President of Federal Affairs, Scott Faber. We'll do that in a moment. Here's what the numbers did look like from the USDA reports yesterday. Corn acreage at or beyond silking has reached 83%. That's 12 points behind last year, 8 points behind the 5-year average. Nearly a fourth of the crop reached the silking stage during the week, with major development occurring in North Dakota, Minnesota, South Dakota, and Wisconsin. Iowa's corn development was well behind normal, with only 73% of it at or beyond silking, 20 points behind the 5-year rolling average. Condition of the corn crop was rated 66% good to excellent. That's unchanged from a week ago. 78% of the soybean acreage was at or beyond the blooming stage last week. That's 12 points behind last year and 10 points behind normal. Pod setting was delayed in all states except for Michigan, North Carolina, and Tennessee. Condition of the soybean crop rated 63% good to excellent, an increase of 1 point from last week. Now, here's the conversation I held with Scott Faber of the Grocery Manufacturers Association. I started by simply asking him what the GMA is.
We represent more than 300 food, beverage, and consumer product companies.
In what form?
We are the trade association for more than 300 food, beverage, and consumer product companies, and provide a variety of services to our manufacturers, and including representation in Washington, D.C.
So are you a lobby organization?
You know, we actually primarily are not. We have a laboratory. We do a lot of training for our members to help them improve the safety of our food supplies. So there's a lot of training. Our lab tests various products. We help companies comply with rules and regulations, and actually lobbying is a very small part of what we do.
In farm country, Senator Grassley has managed to make you the scapegoat for a lot of things that are happening on the ethanol side, or at least bad press that ethanol tends to get. Tell me what the stance the GMA has on ethanol and where that was developed.
Well, GMA has taken the position that we should simply reevaluate our food-to-fuel policies in light of the fact that the recent and significant increase in corn ethanol production has contributed to very high corn prices and ultimately contributed to very high food prices. We've not proposed to eliminate the mandate or the subsidies or tariffs that protect the ethanol industry. We simply ask Congress to reconsider and reevaluate the choices that have been made in recent years that have contributed to a huge increase in the production of corn ethanol.
It contributed to a huge increase in the production of corn ethanol is true, but has not supply of corn stayed up with that demand to this point? And I don't know that we can talk about what's coming in the bin for September, but at least to this point now, I know 1.5 or 1.6 billion bushel carryover is fairly small, but a 1.9, a 2.1 is pretty close to normal.
Well, as many of your listeners know, our carryover stocks for corn are at the second lowest level in 49 years, and the primary factor and the most significant new factor is the significant increase in the production of corn ethanol, especially between 2005 and 2008. Up until 2000, we produced about 2 billion gallons annually of corn ethanol. This year, we'll produce about 9.5 billion gallons, and we've seen just a surge in capacity, and particularly in response to the original federal ethanol mandate that was passed in 2005. So another way of looking at this question is, in recent years, according to the World Bank, U.S. corn ethanol production has consumed 50% or almost of the 55% increase in global corn production. Almost, another way of putting it, is almost all the increase in global corn production between 2004 and 2007 went to produce ethanol in the United States. At the same period, global agricultural demand or global demand for corn continued to grow as people, especially in Asia, continue to enjoy first world dietary lifestyle. So, and that combination of the growth of corn ethanol capacity in the United States and the inexorable and predictable increase in global demand combined to reduce global corn stocks to levels we've not seen in many years.
Well, I'm going to turn this one on your head just a bit as I listen to that. I'm thinking about food security and fuel security, and you're talking about global food security versus what Washington, D.C. since 2001 has perceived as national food security, and I'm not sure that the GMA would find that in its best interest to buck that trend.
Well, you know, I think that farmers and food companies have always believed that our one of our top priorities was feeding people, whether they're here in the United States or outside the United States. And I know many farmers are especially proud of the role they play in helping to feed the world. And I think we're concerned, and I know many anti-hunger and international development and other organizations are concerned that we've now unintentionally pitted our energy needs against the needs of the hungry. And it's hard to imagine that many farmers would want to have put that in a position. But our policy choices, in particular the mandate and subsidies and tariffs that have been put in place, have now resulted in a mature ethanol industry that is so successful that it has made corn more valuable as an energy source than as a source of food. So I think all we're asking is for Congress to reconsider, reevaluate, strike a better balance between the needs of ethanol refiners and the needs of food companies and consumers, and in particular the 20% of Americans who spend about a third of their after-tax income on food.
Well, tell me exactly what it is that the GMA would like Congress to do.
Well, you know, we've just asked Congress to sort of reopen the debate. For this year and for next year, we think GMA thinks that the administration ought to use the waiver provisions included in the energy bill last year.
So that U.S. EPA would act.
That's right, to freeze ethanol production at 2007 production levels so that we can carefully reevaluate these trade-offs. There are many factors that are contributing to rising commodity prices and ultimately rising food prices, including rising energy costs, global demand, poor weather, export restrictions, new players in the commodities markets. There are many factors, but the most significant new factor, and frankly the only factor Congress can do something about in the short term, are our food to fuel policies that are diverting this year about a third of our corn into our fuel supplies.
One final question for you. What is it that the Grocery Manufacturers Association on Feeding the Hungry does, either on the international or the national level, to feed those people who can't afford the products most of them produce?
Sure. Well, GMA and our members work actively with groups like America's Second Harvest to help stock the shelves at food banks. We contribute to many anti-hunger charities, and we're actively supporting through our efforts in Washington proposals to expand global agricultural development and to reduce trade barriers that will ultimately help increase the prosperity of people in the developing world.
The food banks have said that companies have gotten so good at what they do that there is not nearly as much left over at the end of the process, things that are not the right weight, but that are still good and usable products, that they're not getting as many pounds. Is the association looking at some new way to make sure that food makes it to the food banks of the nation?
Well, we every year, and frankly every day, we work with food banks to try to make sure that the shelves are stocked. The bigger challenge, frankly, is that food prices have risen so dramatically last year and this year, largely because of our biofuels policies, that many more people are demanding and needing support from our food bank. So I think that, you know, that we're certainly trying to do our part to make sure that those in need are able to get what, you know, able to have a affordable and healthy food. But Congress needs to do its part too, and clearly part of that is taking a second look at policies that divert so much of our food and feed to our fuel supplies.
I have one last question. I know I told you that was my last one, but have you looked at, and I guess the question is, are you sure it's the corn to ethanol or crops to fuel as opposed to simply the cost of fuel
that, you know, that is driving this? It's a question we get quite frequently. You know, it varies greatly from product to product, but in general, it's the biggest cost of producing food are the ingredients that you use to make the food and the people we pay to make the food, and energy and transportation costs generally reflect at less than 10% of the overall cost of making the food. So, you know, it's when we look at our balance sheets, the single biggest change in the last 12 to 18 months is the dramatic increase in the price of basic commodities, including the price of corn and vegetable oils. And in some cases, that's a result of poor weather or export restrictions, and wheat and rice are largely examples of those. But in the case of corn and vegetable oils, there's simply no question that the significant increase in capacity for the production of corn ethanol in the U.S. as well as the increase in biodiesel production in the EU are driving the price of these basic commodities to levels we've not ever seen before.
Can you give me some sort of aggregated set of numbers? I know you gave me a 10% there, but that adds up to 100% on the wholesale or retail price of products?
You know, I don't have it right in front of me, but their USDA has actually done some analysis on this front. And if you go to the Economic Research Service site, or even the Congressional Research Service, they've broken down a kind of an industry-wide estimate of the cost, the sort of percentage of cost for various parts of the food dollar, and roughly, we actually disagree. We think it's an underestimate. They estimate that about 20 to 25% of the cost of producing food is the sort of the raw commodities, the ingredients. And that the largest share of the cost of producing food are labor costs, and they also estimate that about 8% of the cost of making food is the cost of, in combination, transportation and energy. So you know, it's a convenient whipping boy for the supporters of ethanol, but the cost of the energy costs associated with food production are really a small fraction of the overall cost of making food.
Mr. Faber, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Scott Faber is the Vice President of Federal Affairs for the Grocery Manufacturers Association. He's located in Washington, D.C. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
It's National Raspberry Cream Pie Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1790, the first U.S. census was taken. We had a total of 3,939,214 mouths to feed. In 1793, France introduced the first metric weight, the kilogram. In 1817, Sir Joseph Henry Gilbert was born. Gilbert and his partner, Sir John Laws, conducted agricultural experiments at Rothamsted Experimental Station, the oldest agricultural research station in the world. They are considered founding fathers of the agricultural sciences and are also co-inventors of superphosphate fertilizer. In 1870, Ilya Ivanov was born. Ivanov, a Soviet biologist, developed the practical procedure for artificial insemination of domesticated animals. Initially used on horses, by the 1930s, the procedure was used on other farm animals. And in 1893, Henry D. Perkey and William Ford patented shredded wheat. Whole wheat is boiled, dried, pressed into thin shreds, and finally baked. They presented the product at the World's Columbian Exposition in Chicago, Illinois, in 1893. When their patent expired in the mid-1930s, the name, shredded wheat, became generic. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. I'm Todd Gleason. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon to you, Don.
Good afternoon.
Boy, it's been hot here. Is it going to stay that way?
Well, we are in the dog days, no doubt about it. And we do have more heat coming. We're going to get a little relief here in the short term with some of the thunderstorm activity that made some headlines up around the Chicago area last night. And those thunderstorms and the air behind it a little bit cooler. But you add everything up, we're just going to be in this hot pattern here for a little bit longer, but actually when you look at temperatures that are forecast over the next week or 10 days, they're not going to be all that far from normal, but we've got that humidity in there, which is making it feel hotter.
Not that far from normal, so we'll be in the upper 80s, low 90s, or higher than that?
Oh, we'll have a few mid-90s, but upper 80s, lower 90s is probably where we're going to be settling on in.
We've been talking about a cold front that could come through on Wednesday. Is that still on the list?
It's still on the list. Don't expect a lot, but it is the air behind this cool front that will take those temperatures back down and closer to normal.
Okay, back to normal then. Any rainfall in the next week?
Well, there's going to be some. We expect the better chances for moisture to maybe be in the southern areas of the Corn Belt, southern Indiana, Illinois, Missouri looking at some good chances of rain. Some areas of the Ohio Valley as well. The areas that look to be driest will probably be the northwest Corn Belt. As you get into Wisconsin, Minnesota, areas of northern Illinois and eastern Iowa look to be a little bit drier.
Did I hear that Missouri is still just drenched and really wet?
Yeah, and there's more coming. And I'm afraid that they're just in the path of the next several weather systems that will be producing more heavy thunderstorms.
And those are developed by the hurricane?
Well, actually, no, Edward, the moisture from that is going to head due into south central and southwest Texas, and actually the leftovers will go all the way west into New Mexico. So what may end up happening, though, is that like a big circle, some of that moisture will go west through Texas into New Mexico, then head back east again early in the weekend and early next week. So they may get a little bit of the leftovers.
Anybody dry and hot?
Well, I would say that what would have been areas that were dry and hot are areas of Texas that are now about ready to get a lot of rain.
Okay, well, they'll probably prefer the rain to the hot. I suppose.
In some areas, it'll be a little too much rain for some folks.
Tell me about other areas around the globe where they grow crops, China in particular.
Well, let's go over to China. It looks more moist. In fact, folks watching the Olympics will probably notice that there's going to be some very good chances of rain. Most of China forecasting at or well above normal precipitation here over the next week to 10 days. So they're going to continue to be wet over there. Over in Europe, it's been a little bit drier, especially in western areas of Europe. But what we're going to see are pretty good chances of rain over central and western Europe, near average precipitation over Russia.
And then let's come back to here in the Midwest one more time. Over the next week, how much of a chance of rain might we see and what kind of amounts?
The heaviest amounts of rain will be in the central and those southern and southwest areas, where amounts of rain are going to be anywhere between 1 to 3 inches, upwards of maybe 4 in portions of Missouri. Across Indiana, Illinois, Ohio, rainfall amounts are going to be 1 to 1.5 inches.
Don, thanks much.
Thank you.
Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, joins us each and every Tuesday afternoon. And that's today's Closing Mark Report. Be sure to visit our website where you can listen to today's futures analysis and weather reports right there on the World Wide Web. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.